Hi, this is Jay Warner Wallace. If you're a fan of clear thinking and of being able to make the case for what you believe as a Christian, to be able to make the case for truth, well, this is a great place to learn how to do that. This is Deeper Waters with Nick Peters. Nick has a number of great guests on his show, and I've been just honored to be one of those guests. So if you want to carve some time to be able to become a better Christian case maker, this is the way to do it, right here at Deeper Waters with Nick Peters.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Deeper Waters podcast. I'm Nick Peters, your host, seeking to bring you the very best in Christian scholarship and apologetics. And today is no exception. We're only going to be going an hour today due to our guest request, but hey, that's fine. We'll get in what we can. One of our great books in our tradition is the Old Testament. And many of us don't really understand it. We often think we can just pick up the Old Testament and read it like it was written to us today. And where it wasn't. Sometimes we need to look at what's going on. We need to look behind the scenes. And so for that, there's a great book, Behind the Scenes, the Old Testament. Cultural, Social, and Historical Context. Edited by Jonathan Greer, John Hilber, and John Walton. And we have one of those guys on our show today. Jonathan Greer. He's the Associate Professor of Old Testament and Director of the Hess Memorial Archaeological Library at Grand Rapids Theological Seminary, Cornerstone University. He holds MA degrees in Old Testament and Biblical Languages from William Cromwell Theological Seminary and a PhD from the Pennsylvania State University, where he focused on Hebrew Bible, Ancient Near Eastern Studies, and Archaeology. He is also the Associate Director of Archaeological Excavations at Tel Dan, Israel, and has published a number of works on the relationship of the Bible to the ancient world. Dr. Greer, welcome to the Deeper Waters podcast.
Thanks very much, Nick. It's great to be here.
Now, if my audience doesn't know much about you, tell us a little bit about how you got to be doing what you're doing.
Sure. Well, I suppose I could start way back when I was a junior high kid in the early 80s. And my father, who's retired now, but he was a pastor at the time, and he took a sabbatical to Jerusalem for 4 months, and he took the whole family. And this was soon after Raiders of the Lost Ark had just come out. Mm-hmm. And Biblical Archaeology Review, the magazine, had just started being published again. So it was this, kind of this triple play of collision of features where I just fell in love with the world of the Bible, already loving the Bible, but realizing that the Bible had a context. The events had context, and then the composition of the Bible had a context. And to see that context with my eyes as a kid was really, I think, the start of it all. And I have to admit, I did look a little for the Lost Ark in my backyard, didn't find it. But we did have a Roman aqueduct in our backyard on the outskirts of Jerusalem. So that's kind of where it started. Then in college, I did a few classes in it, and then during my graduate studies is where I finally got to really explore these things in depth, and then it only deepened. And just continues to be mind-blowing in the ways new understandings of the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Now, the question all of us are wondering when we hear about this volume, obviously, is it required to be named John or Jonathan to be an Old Testament scholar?
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of funny how that all worked out. Mm-hmm. And there are more Johns too where I come from. Mm-hmm. at GRTS. So I go by Jonathan there, and then my colleague John Hilber had the connection with John Walton, and then he came on board too. So it's three Johns for this volume at least.
Yeah, John Walton's been on our show quite a few times.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Now, when it comes to the Old Testament, if we're Christians, why should we really care about the Old Testament? I mean, it's called Old for a reason. Why? I mean, we're New Covenant people. Why should we give a darn about this old book?
That's a great question. Well, it's one book. It's one story. So even though this volume focuses on the first part of the story, this is an entire story, and it's the Bible for all of the New Covenant figures, including our Lord Jesus. So those are reasons enough. Also, there's the trend toward neglecting the Old Testament has a lot of unanticipated consequences that are quite quite troubling. I'll give you one that just came to kind of through some circumstances has really become very apparent to me in recent years. And that is this lack of having any kind of vocabulary for extended vocabulary for suffering. If we cut out the Old Testament, so no doubt we have the Passion of our Lord exemplified. We have suffering mentioned in the epistles, and of course Revelation provides an encouragement in times of suffering. But what we have in the Old Testament, we have book length discussions with God. We have laments. We have episodes of wondering, does God even exist? Whole book-length treatments of this. We've got Habakkuk's prayer, of course, Job and Ecclesiastes. These books that give us a vocabulary for suffering in a very special way that that we miss if we don't read the Old Testament. So
Lamentations also.
Sorry?
Lamentations also.
Oh, exactly.
And
yeah.
Many of the Psalms.
You got it. You got it.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are many people, both atheists and Christians, like? A lot of them pick up the Old Testament and think they can just read it as is and they'll understand it well. What are they missing that's actually not in the text?
Yeah, that's a great question, and really was one of the fundamental reasons that we embarked on this journey to provide this resource. And it's really, you know, I like to think of it with modern examples that we can all relate to. And I saw a T-shirt, an advertisement for a T-shirt, just 5-6 years ago. That I use in my classes to kind of illustrate this. So the T-shirt, if you picture it with me, it says, "I've got a fever," and it's spelled with a P-H, P-H-E-V-E-R. "I've got a fever, and the only prescription is," and then under it, it has a picture of a bell with a crack in it. And I saw this T-shirt, and I laughed. I thought that was really funny, and I showed it to other people, and they say, "What? I don't get it." And you have to have a lot of background knowledge to get this silly T-shirt. So I'll cut right to the punchline, but it's a kind of a sports T-shirt for the Philadelphia Phillies. So I don't know if you're a Major League Baseball fan or what, but you know they've got this Phillies fever going and the Phillies fanatic, you know, and they spell everything with a PH, and that's kind of their fan thing, you know, Philly fans spelled with a PH. Well, I have family out in eastern Pennsylvania, and so I grew up knowing about the Phillies and knowing about Phillies fever, and so I knew right away this was about the Phillies. And then, of course, I know from American history you've got the Liberty Bell, and I recognize that with the crack in it. The T-shirt was red, white, and blue, Philadelphia, Liberty Bell, Phillies fever. You know, I instantly put those things together. And when I give this example in class, some people will put that together, but it still is nonsensical. You know, I've got a fever and the only prescription is the Liberty Bell. It doesn't make any sense. if you don't have all of the pieces of the puzzle. So, you know, it sounds, I joke with my students, if an archaeologist excavated this T-shirt, they might think it was some kind of incantation for fevers by semi-literate individuals who didn't know standard spelling with the PH compared to F, and they were still in some using some kind of pictographic writing, and you know, and maybe you ring a bell until it cracks, and then the fever's gone or something. You know, we
and obviously our medical skills were not the best at that time.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, but the missing piece is a silly Will Ferrell skit from Saturday Night Live. Where he's mimicking this rock and roll song, The Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult, and he comes out ringing this bell, and at the climax of the scene, director comes out and says, "I've got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell." And so it's a reference to this cowbell skit. So you've got to be able to think that this T-shirt is funny, or even to get that it's talking about the Phillies, you've got to have a lot of background knowledge. You've got to have knowledge about Major League Baseball. You got to have knowledge about American history. You've got to have knowledge about the city of Philadelphia. You've got to have knowledge about a silly Saturday Night Live skit with Will Ferrell. And if you're missing any of those pieces of the puzzle, you won't fully understand the T-shirt. You'll get maybe a piece of it here or there, but you won't understand the whole. And there's much of the Old Testament and the New, for that matter. There's much of the Old Testament that's very similar. You've got a little bit of the piece of the puzzle, maybe a sketchy idea of the broad historical framework, but you may be missing a very important cultural piece. And we've just had more and more understanding of the history and culture of the ancient world in the last couple hundred years, due to the deciphering of cuneiform scripts for Akkadian and Babylonian, and then, of course, hieroglyphs for Egyptian texts, and then more and more that we're digging up in the ground. So our knowledge is exploding as to what we do understand about the history and culture of the ancient world, but we aren't up to speed with that as Bible readers, and sometimes that can lead us astray in interpretation. So the hope of this volume and just background studies in general is to help us understand more clearly what God is communicating through these people in their contexts, so that we as people of faith who want to live the message of the Bible can understand what that message is more clearly.
Yeah, I have to say, I got somewhat relieved as you started talking about the T-shirt, because I was thinking, I thought I knew my American history fairly well. I recognized the Liberty Bear and such, but was there some fever talk about American history? I could place when you said everything. It's like, oh, good, I wouldn't have known about that stuff anyway.
That's right.
And this book, it really goes through so many of the minute details that most of us wouldn't even think about, but yet they really help form the image of what goes on in the Old Testament. I mean, things like the technologies back then, or wisdom traditions all around there, or even climate and environment. I mean, you all pretty much covered everything, it seemed.
Well, we aimed to be as comprehensive as we could be, and of course, you always inevitably could say more about something. But we tried to just kind of think about what is it, you know, what's important for any of us today, and then how does understanding what that comparable reality was for ancient peoples help us with understanding. So just one little thing, you just mentioned climate and environment. So I'm here in Michigan, And if I speak to my students of the wilderness, and we read about the wilderness in the Bible, for those who haven't been to the biblical lands, they'll think of the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. You know, there's thick wooded forests and the like, and cold, and lots of wildlife. And well, that's a very different understanding of wilderness in the Bible, which is rocky and dry and barren. So you get these images in your head that are informed by your own context if you don't have the ancient context. And that's that can provide some challenges in interpretation.
I know that's something John Wharton has been very big on in his Lost World books,
is
understanding that Scripture is an ancient document.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And another good point he makes in a lot of his writings is he says, you know, we're not, you don't come to the text neutral. You come to the text from the perspective of your own culture. So if you don't have an understanding of the ancient culture, you're not neutral. You're going to read it in your context, and that can provide some problems.
Yeah, I know that someone years ago came out with this article about the Numbers 31 massacre, as it's called often, and how it says all these girls obviously had to be subjected to an embarrassing exam to see if they were virgins or not, instead of realizing, no, in the ancient world they would have worn clothing that would have indicated they were virgins.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's just one example, and so many of the difficulties we have today come from the Old Testament, it seems, when people talk about the conquest of Canaan or slavery, which we discussed last week in any of these. They do come largely because we don't understand the world of the Old Testament, right?
That's right. That's right.
So what are some of the other realities besides climate and such that you think are really important to understand about the Old Testament?
Oh, sure. Well, I could just summarize the categories that we cover in the volume with a little comment, if that would be helpful to kind of illustrate the whole picture. So
sure.
We start with the first section of the volume we call Elements of the Drama, and these are kind of the different methodological lenses that we would apply in backgrounds study. So the first one is the we tried to follow this metaphor of drama throughout the stage. So as the first one, and the tool being inquiries into historical geography. So historical geography involves understanding the ancient environment and then also the human interaction with it. So this would include some of the physical settings of the places where these biblical figures walked and lived, and where the biblical writers also interacted. And then you've got regions and routes, you know, the ancient highways and byways that go through these lands that are very much dictated by the geography and also where the settlements are. Then climate and environment, weather and ecosystems, and then the flora and fauna, so the plants and animals of these regions too. And then with that, the human interaction with these plants and animals, mainly being for food. And then the second tool that we talk about is that of archaeology, which involves the recovery and the examination and the interpretation of material remains from past humans. And there we kind of follow the standard archaeological time periods that archaeologists use who dig in these areas. And we begin all the way in the Middle Bronze Age, so in the toward the beginning of the second millennium BC, and then we go all the way up to the Hellenistic period in the late first millennium BC, and we kind of break those down into the standard archaeological time periods of Late Bronze, Iron Age 1 and 2, and Neo-Babylonian and Persian and Hellenistic periods. So we've got historical geography, we've got archaeology, and then the next one we call the scripts, and this is ancient Near Eastern literature. Understanding, trying to have people understand that the Bible wasn't the only ancient document circulating at these times, but in fact, we've got literatures from other peoples around the biblical peoples, and lots of parallels between what they're writing about and how they write about things. So we cover their Mesopotamian, Hittite, Egyptian, Ugaritic literature, and then also other Semitic inscriptions and Hebrew inscriptions, and then early Jewish literature. And then finally, in that first part, we look at iconography, the images from the ancient world, and again, kind of taking those in cultural groupings of Egyptian, Assyrian, and Canaanite. So that's the first part of the volume. Then the second part we call Acts and Scenes, and these are kind of broad sweeps of the history as we know it. And in the first section, we kind of follow the biblical chronology, but viewing it through the tools, the lenses provided above. And then in the second, we focus more on particular episodes and the way that understanding those episodes impacts the way we understand the Bible. So this is kind of the motivation for this was an understanding that history works on different levels of time. You have big, broad sweeps of history, but then you also have historical events that happen at precise times that then have larger impact for many years beyond beyond the event. And then the final section of the volume moves from kind of the historical focus to more of a cultural thematic focus, looking at categories of God, family, sustenance, and governance. So in each of those categories, we try to integrate as much of the methodology that we lay out in the first section.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to remind everyone at this point, you're listening to the Deeper Waters podcast. We're going for just an hour today. We've got Dr. Jonathan Greer talking about his book that he co-edited, Behind the Scenes of the Old Testament. But if you're here next week, I'm going to have my friend Evan Mitten on come on to help me with Autism Awareness Month. Except he's not being interviewed. He's going to be the interviewee, and he's going to be the interviewer, and I'm going to be the interviewee this time, talking about my life being on the spectrum and having Asperger's. So I figured it'd be a good chance for you all to get to know me a little bit better, the man behind the mic. So next week for Autism Awareness Month, I'm going to be the guest on the Deeper Waters podcast. So I hope you all are going to be looking forward to that one. Mm-hmm. Now, this book is it's very scholarly, but do you also think it's something capable for the average layman to read?
That was our intent. And you'll find, I mean, with 60 some odd different authors, you'll find that some of them really did aim for a more general approach, which was our design, but we gave the authors individual freedom with how they were going to engage their topic. And then others of them took more of an academic slant. So it really varies essay to essay, but as a whole, that was certainly our aim. And I did have one comment that was delightful to hear, but it was from a colleague who was more academic. But he said, you know, the way it's arranged, he said, it really read like a story. He said, I know this sounds super nerdy, but he said, I couldn't put it down. Mm-hmm. So I imagine that may be the only comment of that sort that we get. But at least for some, they picked up the aim that we were trying to you know, by following that paradigm of the story, kind of have some cohesion in a very large volume that is in some ways a little different than many of the larger volumes of similar kinds of collections of scholarship.
Yeah, I'm guessing I'm probably one of the few people out there, aside from scholars and such, who picked up the book and just read it straight through.
All right. Well, I guess you'd be better equipped then to answer it than I would, how it read for you. But I know you're also academically engaged, so.
Mm. Yeah, I thought it was very easy to read and such. I remember there was a lot going on I had at the time, but at the same time I had some spare time, so I'd just sit down at the kitchen table and be reading straight through it and such. And at the same time, though, I think that that's not a requirement for the average reader. The average reader won't pick up and say, I'm really curious about this topic.
Yep.
Then they could go and they could read just that topic.
Yep.
And understand things.
That's right, and that was very intentional too. And you noticed when you read it too, the chapters are relatively short, you know, so
yes,
we could picture it as a textbook where someone could assign certain chapters, or for a layperson who, you know, kept it as a reference work for their Bible studies, and they came across something and they said, I want to know more than that, but, you know, I want to know more than just an encyclopedia entry, but I don't want to read a whole book, you know, so this is something kind of beyond an encyclopedia entry, but still not going to take a whole lot of time to engage a particular topic.
And also, in each subject area, each essay that you read and such, there's plenty of information on there to point you towards even greater works on the topic.
Exactly. Yep. And that was intentional, too.
Mm-hmm. So, when we're looking at works on the Old Testament and such, and trying to understand it, archaeology, you've got one thing mentioned here. Do you think archaeology has been a friend to the Old Testament?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that's near and dear to me as well, because I'm active in an archaeological project and like to think mm-hmm. a lot about the relationship between archaeology and the Bible. And I think it's... archaeology has been used and abused in the question of exploring biblical historical realities. And mm-hmm. I think properly, the best way to view the relationship between archaeology and the Bible is through kind of through three different lenses. And some others recommend similar approaches here. Especially with the first two C's, as I call them, of the three C's. So the first one being where you have a convergence or a confirmation of our understanding of a particular biblical event or of a theme. Believer calls this convergence, where the Bible and archaeology seem to be telling generally the same story. So there have been some exciting developments with discoveries of biblical figures whose names have been found on seal impressions from the city of Jerusalem in recent years. And we have figures who are named in the book of Jeremiah who we now have their seals with their name on it. So this would be that first C of confirmation or convergence. And those of us who read the Bible as people of faith were jumping up and down saying, you know, here we've got it. This is read about this person in the Bible. And then there you go. Now we've got their name here in clay. So that's the first C. The second C would be that of kind of a complementary relationship where you have further clarification that comes from something that we dig up in the ground. So one example I can tell here, we find clay liver models that are discovered archaeologically. We've also uncovered cuneiform tablets that refer to divination through examining the certain parts of the liver. We even have some bronze examples of liver casts that have been made. And so we can reconstruct this practice that was previously unknown or little known of divination through examining the insides of sacrificial animals. And that can provide clarity to perhaps some prohibitions that we read about in the Pentateuch that instruct in the sacrificial procedures to burn the liver up. And it's a bit curious, why are they burning the liver up? Well, some would say, if you've got this context where the liver is used for divination, then you want to destroy it, get rid of it. And there, you've got some clarity that's come through archaeology. So those are the first two C's that those of us who read the Bible as people of faith, we jump up and down, we get really excited about, at least I do. It's very, very exciting. But I say we can't forget the third C, and that's the C of complication. Because sometimes we dig things on the ground that don't seem to fit at all with what the Bible is saying, and they even seem to conflict with it or contradict it. And if we're a responsible person, a responsible archaeologist, you're not going to put it back in the ground. You're not going to rebury it. So what do you do with this third C where you uncover something or you look at collections of things and it doesn't seem to fit? Well, I've moved to a place personally where that third C used to really trouble me, and I'd lose sleep over it, try to figure things out. But I've come to now where I embrace it and even delight in it, because it's a reminder that whatever tools we're utilizing, we're not going to have everything figured out. So God is much bigger and more wonderful than our rational capacities. And if we think we can have God completely figured out, woe to us. We need to be humble in our appreciation of what we know and what we can know. We are only human, after all, and not divine. So some mystery, some complications, some things that don't fit, I think are humbling in a good way. And the result is beautiful. So it imparts humility to us. It allows us to engage in conversations with those who see the evidence in a different light. And I think, too, it can open up conversations that people might not otherwise have. And then for those of us who like to think on these things, it invites some revisiting of the text. Are we understanding the text correctly? Are we taking the genre of the text seriously enough? And look at what is this complication? What is the result of it? And in the meantime, being humbled by it. So I think all three C's are really important as we approach questions of the relationship between the Bible and archaeology.
Before we get into the next question here, I'll just like to remind everyone, since we're going only an hour today, that everything we do here is supported by listeners like you, ordinary people like you, people willing to chip in a little bit every now and then to help us out. And if you can be a regular monthly donor, that's even better. But if you would like to help and support us, the way to do that is go to my website, deeperwatersapologetics.com. There's a link on the side. It says, help support the work of Deeper Waters Christian Ministries. And when you click in there, you get taken to the ministry of Risen Jesus. Have you gone to the right place? Yes, you have. Mike and Debbie Lacona are my in-laws there, and they handle our donations. You make your donation, you get in touch with me, or Allie, my wife, or Mike, or Debbie, and say, hey, I made my donation. I want to go to Nick Peter. I want to go to Deeper Waters. We will give that donation, and it will be tax-deductible. You can also buy some e-books that I have written, namely A Creed for the Ages, The Apostles' Creed in Today's Christian, or God and Natural Disasters, Defining Inerrancy and Contextualizing Inerrancy, and Christian Answers for This Generation's Questions. And one you might be of particular interest right now in light of recent events is Groundless, where my partner and I reviewed Dan Barker's book, Godless. And you could be interested in that, because if you go to our YouTube channel on my website now, the debate I had with Dan Barker last month on the existence of God is up, if anyone wants to go and get it and watch it and such, and I encourage you to do so. And there's also jewelry. Now, guys, you want to keep the ladies happy. Okay, that's extremely important. And one great way to do that is jewelry. So if you want to get something special for that lady in your life, go through our jewelry store and try out Premier Jewelers. And wherever you purchase, 25% of what you purchase will go to Deeper Waters. So you can buy some jewelry for that lady in your life, including if that's your mother, since Mother's Day is next month. And you know the advice I've already given you guys. You can buy something special for that lady in your life to make up for that screw-up that you recently did with her. Or you can buy something special for that lady in your life to make up for that screw-up that I know you're going to make with her. Recognize the situation, Dr. Greer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And guys, if you can't do any of these, please go on iTunes and leave a positive review of the Deeper Waters podcast. I really love to see them. Now, Dr. Greer, do you have an organization or charity you'd like to see people donate to?
Not specifically outside of, you know, I don't want to compete with what you're doing here, but if anyone's interested in participating in an archaeological dig, you know, they could check out our website, telldanexcavations.com, and if they want to literally get their hands dirty, they could come join us digging.
Okay. Now, something I've said about archaeology as well, because I'm a part of several debate groups on Facebook and such, and Christians and atheists both will show up and jump up and down at the latest archaeological discovery. And I always tell people, wait on both sides. Wait 2 to 3 years, because the media likes to take these things and make them sensationalist on both sides.
That's right.
Let the scholars examine them first.
You got it.
Yep. Then come back.
That's good advice. Yep.
I'd said also just now in the talk about how to make donations about my debate with Dan Barker last month. And anyone familiar with writings, you know, he's got a book on about God, the most unpleasant character in all of fiction, which pretty much focuses on the Old Testament. What do you think a lot of skeptics of Christianity really miss in the Old Testament? They just go through and pick out all these passages with things they don't like.
Yeah, I think they are employing a lot of the same methodology Christians do when we're hunting for little snippets to, you know, serve as kind of a bumper sticker or a T-shirt or a, you know, refrigerator magnet.
I don't know how many times I've heard someone quote Jeremiah 29:11 over and over and just every time.
That's right. So it the knife cuts both ways with that. And I would say to people on both sides, when you read in context, sure, you can cherry pick on either extreme, but when you read on the whole, you have a much greater and deeper understanding of the character of God as it's portrayed in the Old Testament. You'll find a lot of consistency with how God is portrayed in the New Testament, lots of consistency with the person of Jesus. Even some of those most horrific, judgmental sounding texts in the Old Testament, if you keep reading, you'll find that there are often glimmers of hope there, that if you read the whole context, it's God clarifying the severity of the disobedience against him, but there's this longing for the slightest repentance on his people's part. He's waiting there with open arms to bring them back. And even when there's persistent rebellion, he keeps saying, well, I'm gonna save some. I'm gonna have this notion of a remnant that's preserved. So you get when you read the whole context, I think you get a very different picture of who God is. One of my colleagues was saying, who came from one of these traditions that pictured the Old Testament as just judgmental and negative, and the New Testament as love and grace. And he said, you know, I really thought this is what I'm going to find. And then I read Deuteronomy. And there is, of course, a consequence for disobedience. But it's just love all over the place. And people forget that all of the things that they associate with New Testament ethics are first in the Old Testament. Loving your neighbor, loving God with your whole heart, your whole soul, your whole mind. All of these things are rooted in Old Testament theology and then continued in the New Testament. My biggest encouragement would be to people on both sides of that, read it, read the whole thing. Don't cherry pick, and you'll find it's a little different than you assume. And then there are many, I think, with some of the problematic texts that deal with violence, and I think we should acknowledge that and be horrified by many of the ways some of these texts are articulated, especially when it does seem to be a very different perspective of Jesus. I think those are important things to not ignore and to explore. And though it's not fully solved yet, or I should say that I would be fully at peace with it, I think some helpful avenues into this problem are ways that deal with what are the genres that these ancient peoples are employing in communicating, God communicating what he's wanting them to hear. So I know you've mentioned John Walton before, so he and his son have a new book on the conquest, you know, and others are also exploring different avenues into this problem via understanding ancient genres in a new way. And I think that's a fruitful avenue to explore, even if we have to admit these are not going to be kind of magic answers that are going to solve all of the problems of this very complex book.
Yeah, we had John Walton on last year to talk about that book, The Lost World of Israelite Conquest.
Oh, great.
And we've had on Paul Copin to talk about his book, Is God a Moral Monster? And Matthew Flanagan to talk about when he co-authored with Copin, Did God Really Command Genocide? But yeah, we've had a few shows on this topic.
Well, great.
I also think it's important for us to realize with the Old Testament that sometimes the Old Testament describes things, but it doesn't really endorse them. Like when I hear
for sure.
Yeah. Criticisms of, say, for instance, the last five chapters of Judges, and they're like, well, look at how awful these people are, and this is in the Word of God. Like, yeah, that is how awful people are. That's what Judges wants you to know. Here's how awful these people are.
Right. There's that context piece again. You know, if you read it as a whole, you get that very clearly.
And last week we had Richard Averbeck on talking about slavery. And I tried to explain to people when I encountered them, we talk about slavery. Look, believe it or not, you couldn't just go down the street and go to a Walmart or a 7-Eleven and get a job and start working for someone there, mm-hmm. you had to hire yourself out to someone else who had the resources, and that was the system set up.
Yep.
And of course, a lot of skeptics of the Bible seem to think the Old Testament was written to tell us how to get to a utopia or something like that, and it wasn't.
Right, right. Great point, yeah.
Now, what are some of the other things that we can kind of miss in the culture, you think, of the Bible that we might not have touched on at this point?
Well, I think just the way, you know, if I were to kind of summarize the two biggest, I mean, we've mentioned them before, but I think genre is a really big one. And category of thinking, you know, what is the literary type? We have kind of, many of us in Christian traditions have kind of a one size fits all for interpretation, or at worst, and at best, we have kind of two categories. We have historical narrative and poetry. So it's either metaphorical or it's literal, and there's nothing in between. Where when you read any literature, ancient or modern, there are many degrees of variation among the different genres. And so we want to understand what the Bible is actually claiming or actually saying before we get into some kind of debate as to whether it's accurate or not. This is really a big problem, and I'm sure one that you on your podcast and just in general have dealt with many, many times. This is at the source of many of the discussions. And I think here, understanding the ancient world is an underutilized resource in this discussion, because God gave his word to peoples in ways that they would have understood it. So, you know, he didn't give Moses an iPad with some, you know, Torah app on Mount Sinai. You know, the ancient laws were given and developed within a culture in ways that they did law, they did instruction. So you get a whole new picture of it when you try to understand the ancient context and then the ways that the different literatures are reflected in these parallel cultures. And that, I think, is a really important thing as we move to interpretation.
I don't know how many times I've gotten into discussion with someone where I say, well, geez, how do you know what's literal and how do you know what's metaphor or figurative? You just pick and choose and such. And I'm saying, but there's no magic bullet with this, just like there isn't any magic bullet with modern literature today. You actually just have to work and study the text, and how so many times it's said that, you know, if you go against a literal interpretation, we're trying to just explain away the Bible instead of maybe the passage really isn't literal.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I mean, literalism just seems to be a big hang up in our culture today.
Yeah, sure.
And something that we forget also with this is the Bible was written in what's called a high context society,
right,
where it's assumed you have a basic context of everything going on. Like when the biblical writer mentions a city, he doesn't tell you a lot about the city. He assumes, yeah, you know about this city, right? And you go on from there. We don't know it, unfortunately.
Exactly.
And like I said, that does come up many times, debates. Dan Barker even threw that one at me about metaphor and such. And something I did say to Richard Averbeck last week was, Mark Noe even said this in his book on the Civil War as a Theological Crisis, that the reason slavery lasted so long over here was because we had this idea that the Bible should be equally clear to all and such. And the attack, the arguments the abolitionists had were better, but they were highly nuanced and required scholarly understanding, so naturally they were doomed to fail.
Wow.
what would you say about all of this, though, to people who say, well, geez, didn't the Reformation, though, teach us that the Bible, including the Old Testament, is supposed to be clear to all of us and that we can all understand the Bible? I mean, if that's the case, why do we really need a book on understanding the Old Testament?
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the things that people are a bit I've heard that many times. You know, this is complicated then. And I like to view all of these things through a relational paradigm and, you know, say it this way. If I'm trying to get to know someone from another culture, how do I get to know them? Well, it's important that I understand their language. It's important that I know a bit of their history, their family history, know their geography, know their jokes, know their songs, know their philosophies, know their education. This is exactly what we're doing with backgrounds studies, as it may be called. So if you think back to, do you really need this stuff? Well, could you get to know someone just sufficiently by greeting them and having a few, you know, short conversations with them? Sure, you could learn the essence of a person. You could understand the essence of a message of the Bible. But would you want to miss out on the opportunity relationally to get to know this individual more and more and more? And for those of us who are people of faith, we love our Lord. We are committed to the Lord. We want to know him as well as we can. Here's a great opportunity. Get into that world into which he communicated his truth and understand what he was saying to those people in those contexts so that we can responsibly grapple with what those things mean for us today. So I think, yes, on one level, you can read and certainly read and understand much of the Bible. But through understanding the backgrounds, you can it opens new avenues of deeper understanding and relationship that I think is something we don't want to miss out on.
Now, I always use this kind of analogy with people say, look, how can it damage any relationship whatsoever, really, to know more about the person you're entering a relationship with?
Right.
I mean, say, look, you always want to know who it is you're getting into bed with, just as
that's right.
It's just there seems to be so much anti-intellectualism in our churches today that seem to think that, you know, you don't really need to study the Bible, that God would just give you everything you need, but the Old Testament itself does often say otherwise, including the New Testament, study and show yourself approved, but the Old Testament compares gaining wisdom to going mining for precious jewels under the earth, which is a very laborious task.
Yes, indeed.
So what would be your hope at the end of the day if someone picks up this book and decides to go through it?
Ah, well, I hope that they would come away with a deeper understanding of the world of the Bible. And I also hope that their interest would be piqued to engage this more and to start seeing some of the connections between how understanding the ancient world can help us understand the meaning of these texts for today.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that, because really we need to spend a lot more time in the Old Testament, I think, because so much of us, we seem to say we believe in New Testament Christianity, but there is no true New Testament Christianity unless we have the Old Testament, is there?
No, that's right. We need the whole story.
Well, I really don't think there's enough time to get into another question and such at this point, so I'll go ahead just a tad bit early and start wrapping things up here. If anyone's interested, the book is Behind the Scenes of the Old Testament Cultural, Social, and Historical Context. As of the time of this recording, the Kindle version is $28.99. The hardcover is $31.13 on Amazon. Dr. Greer, do you have a blog, a website, an email where people can get in touch if they want to find out more?
Sure. I don't have a website or anything, but they can find me at Grand Rapids Theological Seminary, Cornerstone University, online, and my contact information is there. And then for the dig project, that's telldanexcavations.com.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any final thoughts you'd like to leave for our audience today?
Just a thank you. Thank you to you, Nick, for having me on, and for the mm-hmm. listeners for listening. And I hope it's been an encouragement to all to get into the Old Testament more and more, and to understand it in its world, so that we can grapple with what it means for our world.
Okay, and I'd like to remind everyone that next week I'm going to be the guest on the show with my friend Evan Minton of the Cerebral Faith Podcast interviewing me on what it's like having Asperger's for Autism Awareness Month. So, yeah, I hope you'll be listening next month. And I don't know what questions he's going to ask in advance. I want to be surprised that way. But for now, I am Nick Peters, and I am signing off.